inside, deep as the river of.
Chapter 9. Resting on the Stone Steps. Spending the night there had been like putting his head in the mouth of a shark with no teeth, bizarrely lacking in tension. Will had thought the rented apartment would feel like a shooting gallery, but he had been able to sleep without any more disturbance than in his hotel room. Well, what little sleep he'd managed to get. He had eaten dinner alone, then calls Marquez at 6:30 to speak to Ellie. She told him Milo had gone. "To see his wife's sisters in Virginia," she said. Agent Whitward had been sent with him as a precaution. Will had mumbled something, perhaps an affirmation, perhaps something else. When his daughter was eventually put on the line, he had little else left to give.
"Daddy," Ellie had said slowly, worriedly, "I don't want to go to bed."
"You have to, sweetheart." Sitting on the floor, leaning against his own untouched bed, Will had found it difficult to sound anything but hollow. "I'll be there when you wake up."
"There's something in there."
"No, honey, there's nothing there. Nothing but you."
"I don't want to sleep there. Can I sleep with you?"
"Not tonight."
"But I..."
Things had gone on that way until Marquez had reappeared to take a tearful Ellie to bed. Sleep hadn't come easy. Will felt that closing his eyes was foolish. The monsters waited there. He pulled open his laptop and tried to work on what few leads he thought needed followed up. When that went nowhere but a swift headache and a creeping sensation of hopelessness, he had a look at Freddy's article on Tatler.com. The pictures told a story the words didn't. Will next to Freddy, smiling a soft smile, hand on her shoulder as she stood, shoulders back and head high beside him. Will was sure no one but him could see the sensation of nausea and disgust the photo version of himself felt, except maybe Jack and Alana. Even then, he wasn't sure he was the only one who knew how much he hoped it would backfire on the gloating hack.
"Tiptoeing through the minefield, darling," Hannibal said. "It's not as easy as it looks."
"Sure it is," Will answered as he closed the laptop with a snap. "You just have to keep your feet off the ground." Then he'd climbed into bed and wished he wasn't as calm as he felt. He closed his eyes and worried himself as he smiled at the monsters there. Had dreamed, and in his dreams he had wished. Wished for things not meant for wishing. Waking came with a helping of Christmas morning excitement. Something made him overly aware of the snipers watching the building. Getting dressed became an exercise in deliberate movement. Shirt buttoned slowly. Tie tied with precision. Will wondered if he had ever felt more alone while under the watchful eyes of so many. The thought made him think of his daughter, waking up without him. "How long are you going to break her heart?" he chastised himself. It made his fingers ache. He scratched it away. Will was shaving when the call came in. It was answered with anticipation hidden expertly under caution.
"Good morning," he said.
"Not so good,"
Crawford replied in a blank voice, making Will's enthusiasm waver.
"The ferry got lounged in Chicago."
"Oh, hell," Will was able to say, even as part of him warmed with pleasure at the thought. "Trussed up and taken apart piece by piece, I bet. Just like she did to you, right, Will?" He swallowed and started shivering. "You're a fucking monster, Graham."
"Oh, hell no. She's not dead yet, and she's asking for you. It won't be long."
The thought of seeing her made his lips quiver, though he wasn't sure what with.
"I'll go." "Meet me at the airport. United, 2:45. It leaves in 40 minutes. You can be back for the stakeout if it's still on."
Hannibal found him in the sitting room, naked against the glow of the moonlight from the window. The sight was enough to arrest him from his exit, which he hadn't been sure he would be able to make silently and with little fuss. "You are too used to being alone," he thought as he approached Will's seemingly inert form. Maneuvering around this new addition to his household was tricky. "You are the one who asked him to stay," his conscience reprimanded. Hannibal had little to say to that. It had been a wonderfully freeing gesture, inviting Will to live with him, the rashness of which he loved for its rarity. A poor choice of word, he thought. Hannibal Lecter was not rash, though he was, on occasion, impulsive. Will brought out the impulsiveness in him. The thought made his lips quirk. The man in question was still as a marble-carved mirage, all angles and shadows over his chest and legs, across his face cast by the crown of his curls. His gray eyes seemed nothing but pale slits in the gloom, his hands resting against the windowsill delicately as he opened his mouth to speak.
There are spiders in the garden.
His last two steps towards Will were taken as cautiously as Hannibal would allow himself to. For a moment, he considered that Will could be sleepwalking, though he had not observed the behavior in the man before then. Hannibal enjoyed the continued random element of Graham and the constant source of new experiences he offered. This was something new and interesting. He would not pass up the opportunity if it presented itself. Hannibal stood beside him and drew the curtain back with his hand, staring outside.
"They cannot come in," he said calmly.
"You see them too, then. I thought it was just me."
Will sounded as if he were vindicated, blinking slowly as he tore his eyes away to look at him. His stare was part vacant, part dreadfully aware.
"You're going out." "My beeper woke me. There's been a rush at work. I will be back as soon as I can."
Hannibal ran his hand through Will's soft hair. The absurd nicety of their odd situation seemed to help Will find a smile. Hannibal stayed especially still, as Will reached up to place his fingers against his cheek, thumb by the edge of Hannibal's mouth.
"Can't be soon enough," he whispered,
before leaning into the embrace. Will's naked skin kissed Hannibal's hands as he slid them across his flesh, and Will sighed against the caress, rubbing his face against the smooth cyan shirt. The press of lips to his ear made him grip tighter to Hannibal's arms, even as the other man leaned back.
"You are a difficult man to refuse,"
Hannibal's smiling lips spoke,
"and to part company with. I will return before dawn.
I'll be upstairs, away from the spiders."
"Of course, dearest."
A soft kiss upon his forehead, and Hannibal led Will to the stairs, watched as he climbed them slowly, the play of muscles along his back, down across his buttocks and his thighs, highlighted by moonlight through glass, was mesmerizing. Hannibal thought of the Piazza della Signora in Florence, the statue of Perseus upon the defeated Medusa, her severed head in his tight fist. Will showed the same beauty of form, interplay of light and dark on his youthful body, and the same capability for savagery resting beneath. The thought made his quirked lips tick higher. When he heard the bedroom door close, he left through the front. Despite his misgivings, he had to admit a month of cohabitation had done him wonders. He felt awake, highly aware. His appreciation of food and art and music seemed to be enhanced as he reveled in introducing Will to a new level of luxuries. The world appeared to have taken on a sharp edge. Hannibal had been initially cautious when toying with the thought of asking Will to live with him. It would be inconvenient in many ways, such as was being shown tonight. Of course, there was an element of welcome danger there which threw a little spice into the mix. Hannibal did love a challenge, and working his hobby around Will's keen intelligence was a wonderful challenge indeed. Eventually, the Bentley purred along the uneven road, the empty grain silos standing like silent watchers as he passed. The small barn illuminated piece by piece through the watery light of the headlamps. It was cooler out here, Hannibal thought as he exited, slightly damp. The grass smelled fresh, as if it had rained that evening. Hannibal wondered at the images Will had seen as he pulled out his deadbolt keys and crunched across the gravel towards the barn. Spiders, dreaming of silken webs in the dark. The web of manipulation, the ambush, the trap. Spinning clever silk around their prey until they were helpless and paralyzed to its will. Hannibal hummed as he opened the door's many locks and closed them with just as much care behind himself. The spider was a symbol of strategy and dark works to many.
Is he suspicious? Hannibal wondered. It seemed too much to hope for, but Will's mind was beautifully sharp in its intricate architecture.
Hannibal had already observed the magnificent leaps of connection he was capable of, the terrifying absorption of thought he was able to employ when stalking his prey.
And yet, I wish to be careful,
Hannibal thought, opening the last door. The sound of his movement set off the muffled gurgles and sounds of feeble straining, creaking leather, a few wet flops.
I wish to be careful, so as to keep him close while holding him at arm's length.
The thought made Hannibal frown as he pulled down his plastic suit from its hanger and slid into it with practiced ease.
For well? Somebody?
Came the list-laden pleading.
Please, help me. Hello?
It was somewhat disconcerting to think, Hannibal thought, as he pulled the zip tight and donned the thick rubber gloves he kept sterilized in the drawer. He wanted to keep Will Graham. He wondered if it were possible, frowning as he sorted his equipment. Scalpels, forceps, swabs, medicinal alcohol, arterial ties. He turned on the main spotlight and illuminated the man restrained to the operating table in the center of the room, flat on his back, cheeks missing and the wounds bandaged with expert care, enough to allow him to look straight through from one side of his face to the other. While he observed him, calculatingly, Hannibal thought of a quick and simple experiment. As he watched the man's crusty eyes light up in terror on spying him, Hannibal imagined his life without Will Graham in it. The result was instantaneous.
"How utterly colorless it would be,"
he murmured to himself as he picked up the bone saw in one hand and a pre-prepared syringe of local anesthetic in the other.
"No, no, please no,"
the man was begging, tears running down over what was left of his chubby face into his wispy hair.
"No, please, I can get you cash, anything."
"All that would be left would be this,"
Hannibal sighed to the man on the table.
"The same pale imitations dancing around my dinner parties, the same bereft beings before me like paper chain cutouts. And then where would we be? Right back to where I started. That's no way to progress, is it, Mr. Bartland?"
"Oh God, I don't want to die,"
the man sobbed.
"Oh God, I don't want to die,"
the man sobbed messily, spitting up over his fat chin.
"I have a daughter. Why are we doing this? Don't kill ye. Please. Don't kill me!"
"Well, perhaps not tonight, then." Hannibal smiled down at the man as he thought of the beautiful creature waiting for him at home, draped across his silk sheets like an Italian dream. "Just a little off the top.
Please! Please!"
Hannibal did so love a challenge. The corridor of Page Burn Center was a tube of spotless tile. A tall doctor with a curiously old young face beckoned Will and Crawford over when he spied them storming down the hallway towards Lowndes' door. Will felt itchy all over, like ants on his skin, but managed to stay still enough to listen to the doctor's spiel.
"You must be the agent Lowndes was asking for."
Will knew the doctor wasn't asking, but he replied regardless.
Yeah, I am. Her wounds are fatal, I thought you should know. I can help her with the pain, and I intend to do it. She breathed flames, and her throat and lungs are damaged. She may not regain consciousness. Honestly, in her condition, that would be a blessing. However, in the event she does regain consciousness, the city police have asked me to take the airway out of her throat so she might answer questions, if she can. I've agreed to try that, briefly. The doctor stressed the word. Will felt the itch intensify. At the moment, her nerve endings are anesthetized by fire, but a lot of pain is coming.
"We won't get in the way of your treatment, doctor," Jack said, stony-faced. "But Lowndes might be able to help us save more lives."
"I made this clear to the police," the doctor said harshly. Will started scratching at his neck. Must be bad. So fucking bad. He took her, had her all night. Then whoosh. He could see it. Almost see it. Smell it. Feel it. Freddy rolling down the street on fire. Must have been quite a sight.
"Whatever's possible. That's all I'm asking.
I'll interrupt any attempted questioning to sedate her if she wants me to. Do you understand?"
"Yes," Crawford said. "No nonsense."
It seemed to be enough. Will stared at the door, his breathing long and shallow, the nails at his neck scratching over reddened, irritated skin.
"Did you think about it?" he wondered.
"Did you think about what you'd do to the fuckers that told the lies? Incontinent, impotent, repressed homosexual, ugly, shameful. That's what I said about you.
Will,
have you thought about it? What you want to do to me when you get your hands on me? Huh?" He looked over slowly when Crawford repeated his name.
"You okay?"
"I'm okay," Will said, feeling marginally appalled with himself, while simultaneously resisting the urge to laugh. "I had the SWAT team looking after me."
"Yeah, I guess you did."
Crawford didn't seem to enjoy the insinuation.
"Hey, you're bleeding."
"What?"
"Your neck."
Will watched as Jack turned to walk towards the room. He looked in a window to his right, the surface bright and reflective. When he brought his hand down, he found the nails bloody and the pain blossomed on his skin. All the times the pain was better out than in. Better to see the blood run than feel the crawling sickness inside, right, Will? He shivered again, having to bite down on the need to continue. "Get in that room," he ordered himself. "Get in that room and see what you've done." Lowndes' head was elevated in the bed. For a moment, it was almost stranger to see her without her mass of red curls than it was to see her so mutilated and deformed. It took him a moment to realize her ears were gone, along with her hair, and compresses had been taped over her sightless eyes to replace the burned-off lids. Around the thick, corrugated tube leading down into her throat, her gums were puffed with blisters. The nurse beside him moved an IV laden with fluids and painkillers to allow Will to come close. He sat down quietly. Lounge smelled like a stable fire. "Freddy, it's Will Graham." When she arched her neck against the pillow, Will didn't flinch, even though he caught Jack start out of the corner of his eye. The nurse was at her side, checking her readouts. "Is she awake?" Will asked, not taking his eyes from Lowndes. "It's just a reflex," the nurse said. "She's not conscious." The nurse moved back, and Will felt it. He knew he felt it. He looked down. The noises of the room, the voices talking, the beeping machinery, the sounds of the hospital beyond the door. They all faded into a muffled mass. When the black, claw-like hand touched his, Will took a long, low breath. It felt as if he were being touched by death itself. The pale detective sergeant in the corner and Crawford talking in low voices. They continued, even as Will watched Freddy reach up with crackling skin and pull the tube from her mouth. Will stared, hand held tightly in place by charcoal fingers. Her receding lips bled as she spoke. "You've come to see the other side." "You must have known," he whispered. "You knew doing this would bring you here." "You would know." Her pulled black lips grinned like split fish scales, putting your hand on my shoulder like I was a friend. A filthy little friend, patting your target onto my back when I wasn't looking. Bitter, like ashes in your mouth. Will could hear Hannibal was smiling, despite not being able to see him.
"Forgive the unfortunate wording, Miss Lowndes. How distasteful of me."
"What goes around comes around," Will said solemnly. "Is that what you want me to say? Can't make me think I am what you wanted me to be, Freddy. I'm not that damn callous."
"Sure you are," she said,
choking out a laugh that shook her ruined lungs. "You like to think you're so damn clever, removed from the mad dogs you chase down. Is it like being part of the life you always needed?
I don't."
Will swallowed, staring at the hand as it curled tighter, fingers snapping off.
"I'm sorry, Freddy. I'm real damn sorry."
"Open your eyes, wacko. The least you can do is not fool yourself like you fooled me."
"Hey."
Will looked up sharply to find the sergeant looking at him, his dark brown eyes accusingly narrowed. He didn't reply, just waited, feeling the man's animosity like heat against his skin. How long did she feel it? How long did it crisp before the heat turned to singeing, numb acceptance? When he looked back to Freddy, she was unmoved from when they'd entered. Still unconscious, airway still in place, lips inert, hands by her sides.
"You're not saying much, Graham,"
the detective continued. "You had plenty to say in the Tatler."
"Someone outside said there's a recording," Will said.
"Jesus." The man shook his head, the paleness of disgust now tinged with anger. "I'd heard you were a piece of work. Gotta listen to the stories more often."
"We're not here for stories, Sergeant,"
Jack cut in, though he was avoiding Will's gaze as best he could.
"If there's anything that could help us find the bastard, we need to hear it."
"Yeah," the man said, nodding loosely. He looked at Will, and Will avoided his eyes, focusing on his left shoulder. "Lowndes said your name in the ER before they put her airway in."
"You were there?"
Crawford asked. "Not then. Later I was there. But I have what she said on tape. The reporters, some Tatler people, had followed the ambulance. Here, I've got it here." In a sudden, blinding moment of panic, Will felt the need to stand up, be seen, shout out, "Don't play it! Don't fucking play it! Please don't!" Instead, he sat perfectly still next to Freddy and said, "Let me hear it." The detective fiddled with the recorder he pulled from the bag by his chair. Will wanted to ask if there were earphones. He needed to keep Freddy contained, deep down inside. The thought of her voice seeping out into the room made the itch return. The sergeant didn't seem interested in making this easy on him. Will kept his mouth a tight line as the recording played. He heard voices, a rattle of casters.
"Put her in on three!"
The bump of a litter on a swinging door, hurried footsteps and an echoing expansion of people speaking, a retching cough and a voice croaking, speaking without lips.
"Too hairy,"
it said. "Freddy, did you see him? What did he look like, Freddy?"
"Wendy, he's Wendy. Graham's at Nia. The cunt knew it. Graham set me up. Cunt took his hand on me in the picture."
A break in the voice, and a thump as of doors crashing.
Like a hucking hut.
A noise like a drain sucking. A new voice. Authoritative. A doctor's voice. That's it. Let me get there. Get out of the way. Now. The recording stopped, leaving a dull resonance of panic and pain in its wake. Will took a long, deep breath. He didn't move from Freddy's side. Who's Wendy? He asked, after a few moments' silence. The hooker in the hall, the detective said tightly. The blonde Omega with the chest. She's been trying to get in and see her. Doesn't know anything. Why don't you let her in? Will frowned, a sudden indignance rising in him. The itch at his neck flared. He couldn't stop his hand rushing to it. The pain like burning fire as he scratched and scratched. Can't let her partner see her like this. Poor girl will probably pass right out.
They're bonded?
Jack asked seriously. Will hated the superior alpha coming out in the man. No, nothing in the record, the detective said, but I was told no visitors. This woman is dying, Will said, almost to himself, hackles rising at the insinuation. An Omega couldn't handle it. An Omega was to be sheltered and protected. An Omega would break. Think I don't know that? I've been here since 5:45. Sorry, nurse.
Take a few minutes,
Jack said diplomatically. Will was glad someone was still able to.
Get some coffee. Put some water on your face. She can't say anything, and if she does, we'll be here with the recorder.
Okay. Okay, thanks, the detective said, rubbing at his eyes. I could use it. Once he was gone, Will stood up and walked out into the hall. Jack didn't stop him. You owe her this, don't you? You owe her this, at least.
I owed it to you, Will,
Hannibal said from somewhere behind him.
But I could not give it to you. I feel a shame I should not possess. You could not forgive me, and it breaks my heart.
Will closes his eyes and felt sick. The woman was sitting on the hard plastic chairs a few feet down the hall, back ramrod straight. Her purple nail polish was cracked from biting, and her hair had been done in a hurry. Will thought he might be able to smell her distress. Wendy? She looked up like a deer in headlights, though Will thought the reaction might have been less surprised and more terrified of the words about to come out of his mouth. If you're sure you want to go in there, I'll take you.
They said no visitors.
That's okay. I'll take you in. Maybe I ought to comb my hair. It doesn't matter. When the detective returned, he didn't try to put her out. Will liked to think the man judged him less harshly for the gesture. Will knew it wasn't true. For some unforeseeable reason, the thought made his insides twist.
They all hate you, you know that, right? Lounge said. You're the freak here, Graham.
Don't worry, sweetie, Wendy was saying as Lounge stirred. It's gonna be fine. We'll have us some high old times, won't we?
Will stopped scratching when the stickiness at his fingers became wet. Lounge stirred again, and then died. It was a long drive, made longer by the silence. Alana wished she'd had her car cleaned before the visit. It wasn't as if she wasn't used to meeting influential people, or trying to impress. She'd been to enough of Hannibal's parties, after all. The thought left her cold. All that time, and he was right there. Right there, and you watched him, and spoke to him, and learned from him, and fell in love with him, and he was... Do you mind if I turn the heater on? Will interrupted her thoughts.
Sure. Here, I'll get it.
The controls in this car drive me nuts. It's just... There.
Too hot?
She asked. Will shook his head. All right. She knew she was beginning to ramble, but it was difficult to stop. They were the first words Will had said since she'd put her foot on the gas. Starting a conversation had been a hellish thought, so much so that she hadn't tried.
This isn't your fault, she tried to reason.
It isn't.
And it wasn't. She knew it wasn't.
But the feeling was always there, itching and burning.
You introduced them. You did.
Stupid and foolish and irrational, the thought still stuck. You watched Hannibal wear him down until Will did the one thing he'd never do for you. He opened up.
Do we have to call from the gate?
Alana asked as they approached a wide set of curlicue bars, locked solid like an authority figure.
Yeah, Will said, and nothing more.
The grounds were extensive, so much so that Alana was beginning to feel a little small, lost inside the vast arena. Can't be out of your depth here, she told herself. It's not you that you're here for. When the mansion rolled into view, she wished she could stand by her conviction. Christ on a bike, she thought. They weren't kidding. an imposing block of Georgian architecture, like a glimpse into an English estate, the lawn stretching out from beyond the fountain, and the perfectly level gravel driveway. The house was vast, but somehow discreet, refusing to be exposed to any of the foppish frippery of excess decorations or the garnishes of Gothic embellishment. "I wonder if they still have that fucking peacock," Will muttered as he stared out the window. "Let's just hope they open the doors," she said in reply. A butler came to meet them at the bottom of the wide, palisade-lined staircase. Alana stepped out. Will did not.
"Dr. Bloom?"
he asked. "That's right," she said, her smile just for show.
"Please follow me. Will Mr. Graham be accompanying you?"
Alana looked back into the car. Will was looking away from her, staring out of the window at the lawn as if seeing something only he could.
"No,"
she said. "Just me."
"Very good, ma'am."
The house appeared to be just as restrained yet ostentatious on the inside as on the outside. Alana couldn't help looking around her as she was led through. Jesus, no wonder Will didn't want to come inside, she thought. She felt intimidated purely by being led to a room in the West Wing. She could only imagine what it was like to stay here and mingle. It sounded like hell.
"Dr. Alana Bloom to see you, Lady Murasaki."
The room was softly furnished in creams and yellows, mahogany for the woods and the upholstery, oak for the bookcases. Lady Murasaki sat upon a low cushion on the floor, a wide-headed paintbrush in her hand. She did not look up as Alana took a few steps into the room and stopped. She heard the butler leave as Lady Murasaki pushed the paintbrush down onto the roll of paper before her, pulling black ink across its pale surface.
"I see he did not come with you," she said in a staid but authoritative voice.
"If you're asking about Will Graham, he's outside."
"Exactly,"
Lady Murasaki said as she finally looked up to acknowledge Alana. "It is always pleasing to know my assessments were not in vain."
"I'm here to talk about Eleanor."
Alana refused to let this woman maneuver her.
"Of course you are, though there is little to say.
We've got a strong case, more than enough. Stretching this out is only going to hurt Eleanor in the long run. She should be with her father."
"She should be with people who can look after her,"
Lady Murasaki said. Her voice barely changed, yet it emoted a chill note which made the hairs on the back of Alana's neck stand up. She'd heard it before. Hannibal had been a master of subtlety.
"I would have thought you would have been able to appreciate what Will is going through," Alana said.
"I'll take it I'm not too presumptuous to assume he isn't the only one suffering through Hannibal's loss."
"I was not informed I had lost my nephew."
"I see. Then I guess I know which way this is going to go. It's nice to know you'd put your own wants over Eleanor's welfare," Alana said facetiously.
"Hannibal deserves better,"
Lady Murasaki said tightly, putting her paintbrush back on its simple holder. The paper had become alive with a striking symbol that Alana could not decipher. A slinking black snake of ink, twisted and jagged.
"Hannibal is a murderer!"
Alana couldn't stop her own hurt filtering into her words. "And he revoked his rights to any such luxury the moment he took a human life."
"I will not allow my grandniece to be kept in the care of a lunatic."
The first instinct was to defend Will's sanity, yet what came out of her mouth was,
"I'm not so sure about that,"
Alana said caustically. Thankfully, she was spared another retort by the door bursting open. A woman with short black hair stood panting in the doorway, her pretty face the picture of worry.
"My lady, I'm so sorry. He just came in. I couldn't stop him."
"What are you babbling about, Julia?"
Lady Murasaki asked, standing gracefully. Alana already knew what was coming, though she wished she were wrong. She hurried with them back to the foyer, though when Lady Murasaki and Julia continued on into the house on panicked feet, Alana stopped. The air was warm in the sunshine, though cool in the shade. Will had managed to sit himself on the lawn in just the right spot, hidden behind Alana's car. She approached him cautiously, then realized she was doing so, and felt instantly guilty.
"You think he's dangerous, too," her conscience supplied. She wasn't going to deny it. She didn't want to be a bigger hypocrite than she already felt.
When she was close enough, she sat down next to him. In his arms, Will was cradling his daughter, wrapped in swaddling clothes, and her chubby arms free and waving. When Alana looked at her, the baby caught and held her stare, her mouth turning up into a childish smile which let out a laugh.
"I think she likes you," Will murmured.
"You can't just..."
"I know.
I wasn't going to."
"I know. Just wanted to see her."
"This why you asked to come?"
"No, not really. I don't know. Maybe?"
Will sorted Eleanor into a better position, allowing the baby to coo at the movement. The crunch of gravel alerted her to their approach. Alana reached out and put her hand on Will's shoulder. She thought he might have flinched. When he looked at her, she felt like flinching too.
"I want her back, Alana,"
he said with the tone of a dying man, full of regret and resignation.
"I need her back with me."
"We'll figure this out, Will. I promise."
They stood up as the others approached. Lady Murasaki looked utterly composed, but for the bright red spots upon her cheeks. The butler and Julia hovered in the background as she walked towards Will and Alana.
"You are not fit," she said, low and angry.
"Been hearing that from you for years," Will said without humor. "Got anything new up your sleeve?"
"She needs somewhere safe to live, and you cannot give that to her."
"Safe?" Will sneered. "You mean the place I was able to walk in and take her from without the least resistance? Yeah, real damn safe." Lady Murasaki said nothing in reply. Instead, she gestured to Julia, making the young woman bounce forward. When she approached Will, however, she lost all enthusiasm. He was looking at Eleanor, a little lost, though the fondness was clear. When Julia lifted her arms silently, Will handed her over without a fight. Alana felt herself relax. "Keep a better eye on her next time," he said to the young woman.
"I will. I'm sorry,"
she murmured, before hurrying off, the butler keeping his arm around her shoulder as he escorted her back to the house. The three were left on the lawn. Alana felt as if she were between two predators, circling each other without moving an inch. It seemed surreal to be standing here between them. There were years of history here that Alana couldn't fathom, and wasn't sure she wanted to. Will wouldn't want her to look. Still, she stood by him in case he did.
"You cannot come here," Lady Murasaki said peremptorily.
"Do I remind you of things you'd rather forget?" Will rejoined.
"You are not fit," she replied acidly, "and you have no loyalty to my family. I owe you nothing."
"Oh, I see." Will, hands in his pockets, shook his head. "This is because of the trial. I get it. I don't show up as a witness for the defense because I'm in the hospital with a shattered clavicle and a bad case of losing my mind, and you blame me for where he is right now, right?"
"You abandoned him in his time of need. Would you have come to his side if you were able?"
"He put a fucking knife to my throat," Will said, low and dangerous. "He would never have hurt you." "Maybe not." Will didn't sound convinced. "But maybe he would. I guess we'll never know."
"You believe he is guilty?"
"I know he's guilty. They convicted him of killing 35 people. Personally, I think it might have been more."
"You are not fit," she breathed, eyes gleaming.
There was a terse moment, during which Will did nothing but stare at her. Alana would give Lady Murasaki the little credit she was able. Not many could withstand Will's gaze when it finally caught your eye.
"You knew,"
Will said with a bitter smile. She opened her mouth to protest, but Will continued.
"Don't play with me. You knew what he was. You just wished that you didn't." "I do not need your accusations."
"And you hate that he loves me." Will frowned, looking down at the grass beneath his feet. "And you hate that I love him too, don't you? You can't stand it. Never have been able to. He was more to you once, wasn't he? You know, I was never sure. Does the Count know?"
"Keep away from my family," she ground out, shaking with rage. "Keep away from my house and keep away from Eleanor."
"Take good care of her," Will said as he turned to leave. "While you have the chance." The drive home was just as quiet. Alana turned the heater on, even though she felt hot. Everything she'd heard rolled around in her head like jagged spikes, piercing everything they touched. Will closed his eyes and rested his head against the window. He was asleep in minutes. Will came in at 9 p.m., tired and wet. He had not eaten since breakfast, and the thought of food repelled him. It took him a few goes to get the key in the lock, then a further few to find the right turning point for the unfamiliar key. The Justice Department maintained several small apartments near the 7th District Court for jurists. Will had been given one, Crawford another across the hall. It felt like a game of leapfrog, jumping from place to place, getting one over on each other. Will got one over on the ferry got one over on him. Again and again and again. Will wondered who would be on top in the final game. It had him heading for the fridge. With Lowndes dead, it seemed likely he was next. Will hadn't been able to think about that. All he could picture were all the people he'd dragged into this with him. The Tooth Fairy, or the Red Dragon as he was now calling himself, seemed quite happy to torture him before going in for the kill. Take out everyone around him in systematic fashion. That's what he seemed to be planning. The guy wasn't stupid. Will kind of wished he was. It would make things a hell of a lot easier. Ellie had been taken to a secure location by Spurgeon, the chief SWAT instructor and his team. Even Will didn't know where she was now. For a moment, he blanked. Not right. Where is she not right? Where is she not right? The repeated thoughts made his mind turn over, and his inside squirmed. He tried not to think about it too much. It had been years since they'd been apart for this long, even longer since he'd not known where she was at all times. Normally, Will verged on panic attacks when he couldn't find her in a department store. Right now, the only thing stopping him from flipping out was the gin in his hand. He drank it neat to speed up the process. When his phone rang, Will was thinking about Valerie Leeds.
I'm sorry, I'm so sorry, I can't be what you need. I want to catch him for you. I want to, I will, I swear it.
It wasn't a good way to start a conversation.
Will?
It was Jeff. For a moment, he wasn't sure what to say.
I'm here.
Thank Christ, I just read the news about Lowndes. Are you okay?
Am I okay?
Yeah, I'm okay.
Of course I'm okay.
I'm glad. I was worried. And Ellie?
Yeah, she's safe. Swatter looking after her.
You're not with her?
It's not such a good idea for us to be together right now.
A pause. The rain beat against the window, loud in the silence.
You think he's coming after you?
Jeff said, deadpan. How's Richmond, Jeff?
Don't. Don't do that. I had to come out here. I wish I didn't, okay? Why do you have to...
Have to what?
Make it so damn difficult to love you.
Who knows? Maybe it's habit. How's Anthony doing? Will could tell Jeff wanted to say more. When he spoke, his voice was a little strangled.
He's fine. Mrs. Ellie's something fierce, though. I guess we all do.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess we do. Susan's still asking for that divorce?
I think she's calmed down a little. Nothing's fixed. I'm not crazy enough to believe that, but... I don't know.
Damn it, Will. That's not why I called.
Then why did you?
You sound a little slurry. You been to your friend in the fridge?
I've had a couple.
Damn. He chuckled hollowly. I feel like every time I speak to you, you're further away from me.
Well, my clever little mongoose, how I miss you while you are gone.
Will felt the voice coat against his neck, over the bruised and broken skin where his nails had cut through, now scabbed and messy. When he said the words, he wasn't sure who he was saying them to.
I miss you.
Shit.
Milo sounded hollowed out. Why'd you have to take it, huh? Why'd you have to take the fucking job?
Fate, I guess.
I don't believe in fate.
Liar.
Yeah.
Jeff laughed, startled and high-pitched.
I am. I guess I am. Always. Though there was something in the way we met, you know?
If fate ever existed, it was with us.
God, this is hard.
Will closed his eyes and felt the tears he hadn't noticed leak out, rushing down to drip off his chin. He wiped roughly at his face. There was a feeling of a hand at his back, holding him steady. Will shivered.
Calling to say goodbye? Don't call it that.
I don't like to mince words. Will placed his forehead against the cool window and watched sheets of rain whip over the muffled traffic below him. Over the phone, he thought he could hear other voices in the background. He listened to the sound of a closing door. She there with you?
I'm at Susan's sister's house. She's letting us stay here until things calm down.
Has she castrated you yet?
I'm sure she'll get around to it.
Jeff didn't sound like he was joking. Will wasn't sure he had been joking either.
Will.
Jeff stalled, not knowing what to say.
I miss you.
He knew he was repeating himself, but the drink was making his mouth move without thinking.
Will, don't. Please. I fucking miss you. I wish you were here.
No, you don't.
I do. You don't know what you're talking about. I wish I didn't. I really do.
Look, hot stuff, you're gonna come see us when this is over?
Maybe.
Will knew it was a lie, as much as Jeff's offer was nothing but a placation.
Maybe I will. Look, Jeff, isn't there anything I can do?
Stay safe.
You're killing me here.
I know. I sure know. Call me when you're ready, okay?
Goodbye, Milo.
The phone felt like an omen in his hands. Horns sounded outside. Will closed his eyes and knew what this was.
The pain of abandonment. Do you really miss him? Sheep flock together. You're the black one, Will. The black one.
Yet we used to be black sheep together, you and I. Do you see what I have given you? The voice asked. The rain deepened. Tap, 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 from the gutter to the windowsill. Everything shifted while staying the same. The room darkened. The air warmed. The sound of car horns seemed to elongate. The phone rang after he dialed. It was easy to talk his way past the night orderly. Urgent, he said. Didn't he read the papers? Hadn't he seen Lown's grisly death? I want to be put through. I want to be put through right goddamn now. Will held his gin tight in his left hand, the phone tighter in his right. It seemed to take forever. Will felt as if he were being carried with the phone, down corridors, descending in the elevator, through doors bolted shut, heavy. His eyes were almost closed by the time he heard the clunky sound of a receiver being picked up. God has given me this, he murmured. Beware any who would take it from me. A short but telling silence. Will savored the expectation, the want, the need, the love, and the cruel, cruel hate. Will looked up on instinct. He stood there. Will knew he did. Just off to his right. Just out of sight. When the man spoke, Will knew he was in the room.
Napoleon is not one to be bastardized, Hannibal said, walking up to stand beside him. Though you always were one to take liberties.
I don't know. Most can stand to be misquoted when the meaning is still true. Will shrugged, tipping his head to look right. Hannibal watched him softly, dressed in an impeccable chocolate silk waistcoat over a cream shirt. It was wrong, so wrong, that it could almost be right again. You can't be here, you know.
I thought you called me.
Will closed his eyes.
I thought that's what I did, but I shouldn't have. Shouldn't ever have. You always knew what was best for me. Sometimes I didn't.
Am I to take it that Jack Crawford has not sanctioned this call? Will said. He could imagine Hannibal in his cell, tight and cramped and utterly out of place, but it clashed with his imagining him in the room. Will chose to stick with the room. I'm sure I'll hear about it tomorrow when Chilton informs him. Still, it's not tomorrow yet, is it?
It is not, though, regardless, I am still happily surprised.
Maybe I am too.
What would you have me be, Hannibal?
I would have you happy. Will could still hear Hannibal's voice, follow it as the man moved around the room. Though I am sure I am not to be believed. I did not make a good case for myself.
You don't need to explain, Will said, stepping back from the window.
When he turned, he found the meager apartment room had dissolved, replaced utterly by their living room. The fire in the grate was flickering. Hannibal was pouring himself brandy into a snifter. From above, Will thought he could hear the water still dripping. Tap, tap, tap.
But I do, Hannibal continued. One must always prostrate themselves before love if they are to be understood. Love is the one thing that can slay without lifting a blade.
It depends if you grab the wrong end. Hannibal smiled, a small laugh escaping.
I thought you'd like that one, Will said, raising his eyebrows, unable to stop himself returning the smile.
He walked forwards, towards the fire. When he looked inside, he thought he saw a bundle wrapped in swaddling clothes. His smile died. Hannibal joined him, resting his hand at Will's back.
Did you prostrate yourself, Hannibal?
I make it a rule never to allow myself to be vulnerable to something capable of inflicting a mortal wound.
Yet you wounded me. Sometimes I think I'm still bleeding. Should I have been more careful?
Perhaps. May I say I am glad you were not?
No, you may not.
The tapping amplified slowly. Building, building. Tap, 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 tap. The hand slid higher. Will dragged in a long breath, eyes closing again. The smell of wood smoke and hot, burning flesh.
Why have you called me, dearest?
I just wanted to hear your voice. I thought I could earlier, but it was just in my head.
You're always there when I don't need you. In the hospital after Charlotte, and I kept seeing you. You couldn't be there, but I kept seeing you.
You can't be here now, but you are.
I keep opening the door every time you knock.
We are allowed nothing in our minds but what we desire most.
I wish it were true. I want it to be true. Are you going to press the issue?
If you wish to tell me, you have only to say.
A pause. Will said nothing.
Then I will assume that you are merely in need of this.
I'm always in need of this. You just couldn't give it to me.
I wish to.
Liar. Don't lie to me.
Please. You only see it as a lie if there is doubt. I thought you were past doubting me.
I think I'm all out of doubt. It's just acceptance now.
I have to accept that you wanted to love me.
Will?
I've been fighting it. So long it's made me ill from it. Claws in my body, ripping free whenever I think I'm safe. Because I'm lonely.
Do you often think of me when you are lonely?
You're all I think about when I'm lonely. Sometimes I try to pretend I'm thinking about others.
This time?
It didn't last.
I worry for you, dear Will. So far from me, yet so near to me. The rogue is close, the wandering pilgrim, and I know he will undo you if he can.
I'm near to him, though I don't know if I want to be. I can't stop it.
Hannibal? I would be there with you.
You already are, Will said, turning to look at the man next to him. You already are. Lie down with me.
I already am.
Upon his bed, deep inside his house, deeper inside his mind, Will Graham lay down in the arms of the man he couldn't escape.
Hannibal?
Yes, dearest.
I forgive you.